Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show, Music in the South Bay, on October 19th, 2015. Live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful place to do just that. It's also a beautiful place to listen to live music. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by I Insure Me, the most common sense approach to building a lifelong residual income. In most cases, you're already paying for this. Why not turn it into an income? We specialize in home, auto, and business insurance. You're already paying for this because in many cases, our product is required by law to own. How many other businesses market a product that is required by law? Most income opportunities inflate the price of their products in order to pay out commissions to multiple people. Our price will always be the same or less than what you are currently paying, and we still pay out several levels of override commissions. In order to participate in this opportunity, you must be licensed. To some, this may appear to be a hurdle, something that could slow down the growth of your business. It is, however, quite the opposite, as it has the tendency to weed out those that have a lottery mentality, i.e. pay some money to join, do nothing, and become wealthy overnight. Sadly, this idea of get rich quick is rampant in the home-based business arena and ultimately leads to failure. Insurance licensing attracts those who are serious about building long-term wealth. It attracts people who are focused, goal-oriented, and willing to work to create their own success. People like you. See for yourself. Go to www.whyinsurancegame.com. To find out more about the South Bay Show and yours truly, Joe Terry, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheSouthBayShow. We have a very exciting show today, and of course it's a quarterly event here. We love to have our guest here with us, Barry Brisk, conductor of the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra. Barry first conducted in public at the age of 14 when he performed selections from South Pacific at his graduation from Webster Junior High School in West Los Angeles. As a student, he also conducted the orchestras at University High School, Mount St. Mary's College, and the University of Music, formerly Academy of Music, in Vienna, Austria, where he studied with the prominent conductor and teacher Hans Swarovski. Professionally, Brisk has conducted many orchestras in Southern California, as well as in Mexico and Austria. Maestro Brisk has been music director of the Beach City Symphony since 1994 and is particularly proud of having expanded the orchestra's repertoire. He has conducted works by more than 80 composers, more than a dozen of whom are living. Today, we're talking about something old and something new. Jim Stanley, the piece is called Inside Passage. Bella Bartok, Piano Concerto No. 3, with Anli Ling Tong as the soloist, pianist, and, of course, Ludwig von Beethoven, Symphony No. 3, the Eroica Symphony. We're very glad to have you, Barry. Thanks for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Joe.
Thank you so much. I love these conversations that we have every quarter. It's wonderful. So tell me a little bit about themes, something old and something new.
Well, it should be fairly obvious. The Beethoven Symphony was written over 200 years ago, around 1803. The Bartok Piano Concerto was written 70 years ago, and Jim Stanley's piece was written about 3 years ago.
About three.
So there you have something old and something new.
Yes. Now, as is our custom, I did was able to find examples of Béla Bartók's Piano Concerto No. 3, and of course, there are hundreds of examples of Ludwig van Beethoven's Symphony No. 3 on YouTube, so I was able to find samples easily. Of course, I wasn't able to find samples of Jim Stanley's Inside Passage piece, but it actually seems to be quite popular.
I'm only aware of one other performance. It's a fairly recent piece. That was by the Crown City Symphony, which is sort of like the La Crescenta area of Southern California.
Yes.
I think that's the only other performance this piece has had to date.
I see.
Although he has a number of choral compositions, which have probably been performed in churches and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I know him best as a clarinet player, actually. He's a wonderful clarinet player.
I see.
So he's multi-talented that way.
So since we don't have the actual piece, let's try to present a word picture. Inside Passage, what kind of piece is it?
Well, he has various ideas. This one, first of all, it's based on a little segment from a rather obscure piece by George Frederick Handel.
Mm.
And he's taken, you wouldn't recognize it, he's taken that piece and sort of reworked it in the first movement. There are two movements to this piece, Anger Issues and Dream Sequence.
Mm.
Now, the Anger Issues are not actually him trying to express anger as such. He's just trying to play with ways in which music can reproduce the idea of anger. I mean, when you listen to the piece, it's very, but you don't think, oh my goodness, something terrible is going to happen. It's not that kind of anger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the way he felt he could use this sequence from Handel in a dramatic way.
Right.
The second movement, Dream Sequence, is completely the complete contrast to the first movement. The first movement being very, you know, as I said, vigorous and quick, and this is very slow and melodic and drawn out. And you can imagine any kind of a sort of a dreamy sequence, and we know how sort of silly dreams can be, moving from one thing to the next and making no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Without bothering to ask Freud what it might have meant. You can just sort of let your mind go with it and imagine whatever you can. It's a very lovely thing with a little English horn solo here and there. It does rise to a climax, but it's not a brooding climax. It just sort of rises and then falls back down and ends similarly to how it began. So you get... the two movements, by the way, go directly from one into the other without a break. So you get your energetic, vigorous first movement, followed by a serene, gentle second movement. So even without thinking about these titles, it makes musical sense to have this big contrast, which is the way most composers in the past organized their music, by contrast.
So now this is expanded the number of live composers that you will have conducted.
Probably, although that count of 12 that you mentioned I did a couple of years ago, I'm not sure where we actually are today. But yes, this is our first piece by Jim. Right.
Right. Wonderful. Do you find that there are a lot of pieces that you either are aware of through colleagues or that you just here at various functions that you attend that are being written today that you're especially excited about?
Oh, there's lots of good music being written today.
Hmm.
It's kind of interesting. If you were to go back 50 years to the 1960s, that was when the ultra-modern, which back then we called the avant-garde, sort of took precedence. This is in the classical music world, nothing to do with jazz or pop music.
Mm-hmm.
The avant-garde was all very difficult music, many times very hard to listen to music. You couldn't make sense of it. But that dominated.
Right.
For whatever historical reason, that dominated. eventually that sort of gave away. We sort of got past that, and we are now in a multi-stylistic period where anything goes. You can write a piece that follows normal harmonic procedures and C major chords and all that, and it's equally well accepted as a piece by a different person, which is terribly complex and the kind of thing that may put you on the edge of your chair, whether you like that or not.
Right.
Back in the 60s, more conservative pieces and composers were sort of frowned upon. But today, everything is possible. You can have the latest, and you can have things that are blends and things that have little elements of rock and roll in them or jazz within it. So the whole musical world has shifted. So you can get all kinds of things which are quite interesting these days.
Very interesting. Very interesting. That's wonderful. When you talk about the avant-garde, I mean, we're talking about perhaps in the 60s with John Cage and that whole movement.
Well, he was part of it. Although he had his own kind of quirky ways of thinking about things. But when you think of the avant-garde, you're thinking primarily of the Frenchman Pierre Boulez, the German Karl-Heinz Stockhausen. You never think of him in quite those words, but the American composer Elliot Carter, who passed away about 2 years ago at the age of 104,
wow.
And he kept composing to the very end. His music is also quite difficult. There are many people who love it, but it is a very ultra-modern style.
Right.
You know. And so people who, if you know a name like Walter Piston or Howard Hanson, who are the conservative composers who came out of the 40s and 50s, their music sort of practically stopped being performed because they just weren't stylish back in the 50s and 60s.
Right. You know. Wow. Well, now, of course, these other two pieces, one written 70 years ago and one written 200 years ago, let's talk about the Béla Bartók piece. This is piano concerto.
Right. No, that's his third piano concerto. It's kind of interesting. The first two piano concertos are very vigorous and sort of have a little of an edge to them. And he was a pianist for those two pieces. The second one is a little bit gentler than the first one. The third one is, by comparison, the most gentle of all.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote this at the very end of his life in 1945. At this point, he was dying, and he knew it. And he wrote it in a more gentle style because he wrote it for his wife, Ditta, who was a professional pianist, but not the most brilliant sort of pianist. So he wrote her a gentler piece. I don't mean to say that the piece is easy to play at all,
right.
But it's still, you know, a very professional thing. So it's a sweeter in style. It does many of the kinds of things that Bartók would have done, but he was literally dying when he finished it. When a friend of his visited him, and his last night at home, he found Bartók propped up in bed with all the manuscript pages around him and medicine bottles and trying to finish the score because he knew when he went to the hospital he wasn't coming back. And that is what happened, unfortunately. Oh, I forgot exactly the day of his death, but it was almost exactly 70 years ago.
Okay. All right.
Right. So we have this here. It was first performed by after his death by two Hungarian musicians, the Hungarian conductor Eugene Ormandy, who was a conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra for many years, and the pianist Gregor Sándor, and they did the first performance of this piece in early 1946. And it's been in the standard repertoire since then.
It's a very interesting piece, and it's also much shorter than I expected. I mean, depending on the tempo you choose,
Right.
how
it's long, approximately 22 minutes long.
I see, yeah.
Right, for a certain, like the Beethoven Emperor Concerto, the fifth piano concerto, is at least 35 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, you have to, when you organize concert programs, you have to balance many things.
Mm-hmm.
Like a symphony, which was the longest symphony written at that time, is 47 minutes long.
Right.
Previous Beethoven symphonies were like 32 minutes.
Right.
So that's an extra 15 minutes long. So therefore you don't want a huge monster piano concerto on the same symphony when you have this long, on the same concert when you have the long symphony.
Right.
So you have to sort of balance things out. And Jim Stanley's Inside Passages is about 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, one side that's not short, but is an economical package. And the other side, you get the expansive package after intermission.
Right. That's wonderful. Now, we have that piece. Is there anything else that you'd like to highlight on the Béla Bartók piece before we take a listen?
Well, he uses lots of different moods. And in the slow movement, the second movement, he makes reference to the second movement of a Beethoven string quartet, the one opus 132, which has in it what Beethoven referred to as a holy song of thanksgiving, which Beethoven wrote after he recovered from a serious illness. Bartók doesn't quote that, but he takes the style of it in his own. He uses the mood of it within his own compositional style, which is 150 years after Beethoven composed his piece, to write something similar. The only unfortunate difference is that Bartók did not recover from his illness, and Beethoven did recover. So, you know, he sort of lets you know that he's used this Beethoven string quartet as a point of departure. That starts the second movement and ends the second movement. And in the middle of it, of that movement, you get sort of little things which I refer to as night music. Night music is a term we also get from Mahler in his Seventh Symphony. He has two movements called night music, where you get sort of gentle little things and little bleeps and things come out, which are they just sounds in the night? Is it a bird? Of course, you don't get too many birds singing at night, but you get these little bleeps and things that are animals scurrying about in the forest. You see these little things which seem sort of nocturnal.
Right.
Yeah, and then we come back to the opening part, which is sort of like a chorale, you know, based on this, holy song of thanksgiving.
Right. Well, this is the exciting part, ladies and gentlemen. When we get to hear great music on the radio, online here, celebrating the coming, this coming Friday, at the Marseille Auditorium, the Beat City Symphony Orchestra will be performing several pieces of music in a program called Something Old and Something New. This is Béla Bartók's Piano Concerto Number 3, with An Li Ling Tong being the soloist on Friday. Here's a sample.
Thank you.
very accessible and modern, it feels.
Oh, definitely. Yes, he was actually one of the most successful and influential composers of the first half of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So he's up there as one of the giants, him and Stravinsky, and perhaps a couple of others.
Right. Very, very, very accessible. I think a lot of people did he write, 70 years ago, did he write music for movies?
No, not at all.
Really?
That wasn't him. No. He spent most of his life in Hungary.
Mm.
I have no idea of the history of the film world in Hungary in the first half of the 20th century, but no, he was not involved in that.
I see. Okay, beautiful piece. And just to remind people again, this Friday, the Beach City Symphony, this is the 66th season?
Correct.
66. This Friday, the Beach City Symphony will be performing at the performance itself is at 8 p.m. Is that or 8:15?
8:15, right.
Mm-hmm. 8:15. But you have a pre-concert lecture that begins at 7:30. Correct.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about why you speak before each of the performances of the Beach City Symphony.
Well, the simple answer is those pre-concert lectures existed before I became music director, so I just walked. That's what I was supposed to do.
Okay.
But it gives people a little taste of what's coming. I mean, I don't play anything on the piano, or we don't play, CDs to inform people about what's happening, but I give a little bit of background. Now, admittedly, there are printed program notes which talk about these pieces. Not everybody reads those,
right.
Because you're there with a friend or a spouse or something, and you're chatting and whatnot, and you don't have time to actually sit down and look at it and think about what it says, because that's, shall we say, deep reading as opposed to a little fluff. So it gives people a sense of the music to come. It also takes away from, shall we say, some of the pomposity of a symphony concert with a conductor who walks out in white tie and tails. They actually get to hear me talk and realize that I, too, am a human being, and I stumble over my words occasionally, things like that happen. So it makes the orchestra, in a sense, more accessible. It makes the conductor more accessible to the audience that way.
I have to say, Barry, that I find it to be one of the highlights of being the Beach City Symphony Orchestra experience is to have you speak before the performance, because it as you say, it really does highlight those things in the written program, but it expands beyond that, and people get to know you a little bit. And you have spoken of little anecdotes and so forth in the orchestra and in the rehearsal room and so forth, and it makes the orchestra so much more accessible, and I feel like I belong.
Right, because I mean, in addition to talking about the music, as you implied just a moment ago, I tell people about young ladies in the orchestra who just had a baby 3 months ago, things of that nature, so it makes it all something you can relate to and very human,
right,
as opposed to being something austere.
Right. It's a wonderful addition to the evening to be able to hear you speak and give a little history of the Beach City Symphony. And then for someone who has not been there, we also get to hear from, I guess it's the chairman of the Beach City Symphony Board of Directors?
That's correct. Although these days we have to use the word chair, because she is a lady, so we the modern name say she's the chair of the board. Right.
I see. Right. She is. And
yes, that's Pat Chavez, right.
Pat Chavez.
She always speaks, right. She speaks immediately before the concert.
And there's always something interesting in that regard. There is you become a part of the Beach City Symphony, which is our orchestra, the people's orchestra, if you will. It's a volunteer
orchestra. Okay, that's a good way to put it. We don't want to sound too Soviet here, but that's the idea.
No one sounds Soviet today.
I hope not.
Strongman Putin, and we long for the days of the stable, somewhat enigmatic, somewhat strange, and mysteriously dangerous Soviets, which now we're stuck with the austere and demonstrably dangerous.
I think we are wiser not to get into politics. We're going to talk about the South Bay and music. So let's let that go.
Yes, of course. I love all that Pat Chavez brings. There's a raffle. It's quite delightful to hear some of the news of the orchestra. And, ladies and gentlemen, it's free, of course. The parking is $3. If you bring three crisp $1 bills, you will be able to pay for your parking in the parking lot at one of the kiosk machines, or you can pay at the machines that are near the auditorium box office. It's very simple, very easy, and it's wonderful. It's one of the highlights. My wife and I love to bring in the next quarter with the Beach City Symphony, and we're looking forward to this coming Friday. So now we have the third piece, which is everyone. I know for a fact when you play the Fifth Symphony, it seems like the auditorium is overflowing. People come from all around to hear the Fifth Symphony. Do you think the Symphony Number 3 is as well known?
Oh, nothing is as well known as da 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 da. You know, even little children, if you say Beethoven, they'll just go da 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 da. They don't know what any of the music is, but everybody knows that little bit.
Right.
So nothing is as popular as the Fifth Symphony. If for people who are music lovers, who go to concerts, listen to CDs, they all know the other eight symphonies by Beethoven.
Right.
But in the popular mind, you know, that's the catchphrase. And, of course, unfortunately, about 20 years ago, there were a couple of movies about a dog named Beethoven. They were for little kids. I never saw the movies. Mm-hmm. But so for a while, you know, children thought Beethoven was a dog, mm-hmm. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
But that's just life.
Now, let's talk a bit about where this symphony sits. Of course, it's Symphony Number 3, but where does it sit in the pantheon of pieces written by Beethoven?
It's the first one that, shall we say, is truly great. His first two symphonies, hey, it's Beethoven, quality is always there. They're very well done, very well put together.
Hmm.
This one is different.
Hmm.
First, there's the length of it, but and so each movement is a little bit on the lengthy side,
mm-hmm.
But it has a lot to do with the historical background. When Napoleon started to become famous, Beethoven was very enamored of his political views, his trying to, you know, build on the French Revolution and create a wonderful thing. And he basically dedicated the piece to Napoleon.
Hmm.
And then Napoleon declared himself emperor.
Hmm.
And that was very upsetting to Beethoven. If I can find this quote here, which I cannot.
Hmm.
But he basically was so upset. He tore off the title page to the symphony and renamed it Eroica, which in English is heroic,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, was very mad at Napoleon. Although a little while later he did write to his publisher and saying the title of the symphony really should be Bonaparte, which was Napoleon's last name. So he was sort of disappointed, but he couldn't get away from the fact that he was thinking of Napoleon. Now, when you hear this thing, he's not thinking this is not representative of Napoleon's personality or anything like that. The concept of character, and this is mainly in the first movement that he's trying to depict this very heroic thing. The second movement is a very extended funeral march. Funeral marches were not uncommon to make appearances in classical music, but this one is very extended. It's obviously sort of, I wouldn't say sad, but, you know, has a sorrowful flavor to it. The middle section then changes tone and went from a minor key for the march to a major key, a brighter key. If one wanted to wax poetic, you could say it starts off sadly, and then perhaps this represents the soul going to heaven. But then we come back to the recapitulation, and we go back to the sad part again. So I'm not sure if that little bit of philosophy works there, but we end in the way it started in this very sad, dramatic way. The end of the second movement is very interesting because the last, let's say, 12 measures or so, he takes the main theme, but he pulls it apart. You'll have three notes, and then the rest doesn't happen. There's a pause, and then the next four notes happen, and then there's a pause, and then a few more notes happen. So he basically pulls his theme apart as part of the slowdown to the end of the movement. Nobody else had done anything before this. It was a brilliant idea. You frequently get the silly pun that he was, quote, decomposing.
Yeah.
Okay, we can let that go. But he does pull the theme apart at the end of the second movement, which was a totally new idea. Then we get to the third movement, a typical Beethoven scherzo. You know, it's in 3-4, but a quick thing, so you're going 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And he does two interesting things there. Every scherzo and minuet has a trio. But here, the trio section is given to three French horns who have a delightful, energetic kind of a thing, sort of based on, let's say, hunting calls and whatnot, which is the kind of thing French horns used to do back then before they had valves. And it's just completely different. You know, nothing like this had ever happened before. And then, of course, we go back to the recapitulation and we get the first part, once again, the scherzo. But there's one section where he changes the meter to two. Everything would be going along 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then all of a sudden you're hearing 1-2-3, 1-2-3. So it totally interrupts what any other composer would have done, keeping the 3 meter going, and he interrupts it there. And it was quite a shocking thing at that period. You know, I mean, when I was a child and first heard this at the age of 12, I didn't believe it either. But then I was a little young at the time. But the concert goers who went to the first couple of performances, they would have been, you know, utterly astonished to hear that duple meter going along when it should have been a triple meter.
Okay. Yes.
So there's lots of new stuff that happens in this symphony.
So this is as you say, his first great symphony. It was a time of great invention.
Oh yes, and I didn't mean to put down the first two symphonies, but this one is so utterly dramatic that it just grabbed his attention. Like the fourth symphony after that is very well done. It's a masterpiece, but it doesn't grab you the same way the third does, because it's not that dramatic. And then, of course, you come into the fifth symphony, and we're back to big drama.
Right. And it's strange how, you know, we talk every quarter, you and I get together and talk on the radio about what's coming up for the Beat City Symphony, but this music draws people in a way that, you know, popular music is popular, obviously, and people live their lives to the tunes of popular music. but they also live their lives to the tune of music that was written 200 years ago. What is that enduring power of this style of music, Barry?
Well, it's simply great. I mean, okay, I'm not trying to put anything down.
Yes.
Pop songs, basically these days, the artist has some ideas. They go into a studio. They have a recording session maybe for a couple of days. They develop it, and it's done. A composer like Beethoven spent a year thinking about every note in this symphony. It couldn't be better. Kind of mental process that goes into creating these kinds of works. It's not better than pop music or jazz. It's just a different approach. And the styles are also different. I mean, all the different forms of music, you know, pop, jazz, rock, you know, country, western, whatever you want, classical, they're all good on their own terms. But that's one of the big differences in classical music, is that so much time is put in for each piece, you know, that's been thoroughly thought through many times before the composer actually releases it.
Well, you've already given us several examples of musical, you could call them almost musical trivia, that if you're a musician, or even if you're just a sophisticated listener, you can now listen for in this Symphony Number 3 and enjoy recognizing. And that's something that you can visit over and over and over again as you hear the piece throughout the years, these stories about these elements in the music that were the result of a great deal of thinking.
Correct. And it's not just a story like the Napoleon story,
right,
which is, if you want, a little bit superficial. I mean, it's always very interesting, but you don't have to think about that when you listen to the music. But each time you hear the music, you will find something you didn't notice before. Some little inner voice will happen, or the way he juxtaposes two different things. And that's the wonderful thing about it all. It's not the same. You may listen to the same performance again if you buy a CD, but your ear, as you get more sophisticated with each piece, will discover more inside of it.
Right.
Because, of course, these pieces are on a grand scale, 47 minutes long. No pop song or jazz tune is 47 minutes long. They're much shorter because it's a different style.
Right.
You know, but Beethoven gives us a great deal to listen to.
Well, in a few moments, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we're talking with Barry Brisk, conductor of the Beach Cities Symphony Orchestra and music director as well. We're going to be playing a bit of Ludwig von Beethoven's Symphony Number 3. But before we get to that, I'd love to also invite anyone who would like to call in and ask Barry a question. Please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. We're going to be back with Barry in a moment. First, I'd like to pay the bills and do a little advertisement, and then we're going to hear some of the Symphony Number 3. What is the most common sense approach to building a lifelong residual income? In most cases, you're already paying for it. Why not turn it into an income? We specialize in home, auto, and business insurance. Renter's insurance, very, very valuable for those out there that are renting, to have insurance, because, of course, your landlord does not have insurance on your personal property. And, of course, renter's insurance also covers storage units and that are far from your home and so forth. They often cover much more than just the contents of your home. Homeowner's insurance, of course, and business liability insurance, property and casualty insurance. How many other businesses market a product that is required by law? Most income opportunities inflate the price of their products in order to pay out commissions to multiple people. Our price will always almost always be the same or less than what you're currently paying, and we still pay out several levels of override commissions. In order to participate in this opportunity, you must be licensed. To some, this may appear to be a hurdle, something that could slow down the growth of your business. It is, however, quite the opposite, as it has a tendency to weed out those that have a lottery mentality, pay some money to join, do nothing, and become wealthy overnight. Sadly, this idea of get rich is rampant in the home-based business arena and ultimately leads to failure. Insurance licensing attracts those who are serious about building long-term wealth. It attracts people who are focused, goal-oriented, and willing to work to create their own success. People like you. See for yourself at www.whyinsurancegame.com. That's whyinsurancegame.com. So now, Barry, we're going to hear a bit from Beethoven's Symphony Number 3. Any last words about the style or any other tidbits for us?
No, I think we've been through that. Let's just let everybody enjoy the little excerpt.
Let's enjoy it right now. Ludwig von Beethoven. Thank you. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Boy, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, there's another little musical tidbit I can mention there,
yeah.
That Beethoven's first two symphonies had introductions. Symphonic introduction is always slow before the fast part begins. Mozart did that most of the time, as did Haydn. In the Beethoven, he just gives you two loud chords, and then he goes right into the whole thing. That was also a shock for the audiences there, you know, just to go right into it with only two chords and not a lengthy introduction to sort of get you into it.
Mm.
So just another way he hit you over the head with, pay attention, I'm doing this.
Right. So this, again, this is a musical invention. This is something that he was doing where he would have recognized that this was not the way it was done, but he was going to do what he was going to do.
Oh, exactly. And it was very conscious. He knew the classical style had sort of done its thing, and he had participated in that, and now it was time to move along.
Mm.
Right, so he was very conscious on his part.
Now, of course, I do not want the show to go without mentioning, for the Béla Bartók piece, you have a soloist. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about Anli Ling Tong, the piano soloist.
Right. She was originally from Taiwan, but at either the age of 11 or 12, she went to New York to study at the Juilliard School, which she did, and, you know, was a graduate from there. She's lived in the South Bay for many years. This is the fourth time she's performed with the Beach City Symphony. The first time she played a Mozart concerto, the second time a Chopin concerto, the third time she played Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, and now she's playing the Bartók Third Piano Concerto. So those are very stylistically different pieces, Mozart, Chopin, Gershwin, and Bartók. So she's got a broad range of musical interests, more than many pianists, and she plays beautifully. I mean, I can't tell you exactly how many years she's been living in the South Bay, but she's, you know, a big part of the Beach City's community down here.
Mm-hmm.
She also plays in a piano trio occasionally. All three of those people are Juilliard graduates, and she gives recitals occasionally. So if you were to, look her up, Google it or something like that, you probably find out about other performances available.
Right. That's a wonderful thing. Yes, we definitely should look her up. She is a marvelous performer. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, you will get to hear her and all this beautiful music this coming Friday. It's the 26th? What?
23rd.
The 23rd, this coming Friday. The performance begins at 8:15, but you really want to get there about 7:20 so you can get your seats. And then at 7:30, Maestro Brisk will be giving a talk about the evening and the evening's music that you do not want to miss. And also, whenever Beethoven is played, it is quite busy. So there will be a lot of people having a very enjoyable time, and so you want to get there and get your seats. One more question I always have, Barry. My wife is a piano player, a pianist, and she always asks, which side should we sit on so that we can see the pianist's hands?
Well, facing the stage, if you want to see the keyboard side, you need to be on the left.
You need to be on the left.
On the left, yes. I mean, the sound will be perfectly good if you're on the right side. To watch the keyboard, you need to be on the, as you walk into the auditorium, you need to be on the left side.
Okay. And these are little tidbits that you learn when you listen to the radio show. These are things you need to know.
Right.
It's always wonderful being with you. How are you doing, Maestro Brisk? How are things going in your life How are ancient coins going in the lives of your
yes,
wife?
Yes, well, as some of your audience knows, my wife is an expert on ancient Greek coins.
Yes.
And actually, that's going to take us to France next week.
Awesome.
Right, she's participating in a conference in the city of Orléans, which is about an hour and a half southwest of Paris by train.
Mm.
So the day after the concert, next Saturday, we're flying to Paris and then taking the train down to Orléans.
Mm.
And at the end of the week, there's a three-day conference there, an international sort of a thing.
Mm.
And we're looking forward to that. And before that, we're going to be spending some time in some well, I should interrupt myself and say that Orléans is at the east end of the Loire Valley.
Oh.
You may know the name of the Loire Valley because it comes up on some very good wines.
Mm.
And so we're going to be staying in a little town called Blois, where you can see the local scenery, the valley and whatnot, and visit a number of castles that go back 500-600 years and museums there. So we're looking forward to a good week in France.
Fantastic, fantastic. And that's a wonderful note to end on, because we now will think of you more and your wife. Greek coins, ancient Greek coins, and an hour and a half train ride through the French countryside.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds fabulous. Well, enjoy. Enjoy. And thank you so much, Maestro Barry Brisk, for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Joe.
We're looking forward to seeing you on Friday at the Marseille Auditorium. It's right on the campus of El Camino College, ladies and gentlemen. Very easy to find if you're looking for directions from other points throughout the Los Angeles area. You can just go to Beach Cities Symphony. That's two S's in the middle, Beach Cities Symphony. And we look forward to there. And everyone, have a fabulous Monday. And share this with all your friends. This is a wonderful performance that you will be seeing. And, of course, it's free. We'll see you all there. Bye-bye now.